studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Somewhat alive and awake, it's Oregon Update right here on KRBN. I'm Robin, and sitting way across there, 30 miles away, is Cliff.
Hello, I'm here live, and I was just excited to be here, just so excited to be here.
He is. It's almost disgusting.
Maybe it is disgusting.
Yes. And speaking of being here, we'd like you to be here, too. And Cliff, you over there in the back, tell us, the good folks out there, how they could join us today.
In the back? In the back, what is this? 646-721-9887. And that moves me to the front. 646-721-9887. Hello there.
Hello. Since you answered the question correctly, yes, you do get to move to the front of the line. And for 100 points, what is our email address? How else is the, if we're on the archives, are people listening on the archives, how can they participate that way?
Well, I'm not sure if it's KRBN or KRBNradio.com.
Sigh, you go back two spaces.
Yeah.
You can email us, by the way, folks, talk@KRBNradio.com. The chat room is online right now, blogtalkradio.com/KRBN, if you would like to participate. Unfortunately, with Blog Talk, if you do not have an account, which is free, by the way, and you're logged in as a guest, you can only participate with... You can only see what's going on. You can't participate. I do wish they would change that. We also have a Facebook and Twitter page, and we are on iTunes, so all of our episodes are on there, all 200 of them plus.
You know what we should do?
What?
We should allow people to give us their name and address and telephone number, and we'll sign them up for free.
And they can do that without our intervention.
Don't say that. We want them to think we're giving them something free.
We are.
Anyway, well, it was a thought.
It was a thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you have anything you'd like to talk about in addition to what we're talking about, give us a call, 646-721-9887. What I'd like to do is invite people that if you've never called a talk show before, Blog Talk Radio is really a good forum to get started, and I'll warn you, it's addicting. And so what happens is when you dial 646-721-9887, besides that, you can listen to the program as we are live. And when you decide to participate, just push the number 1 on your phone, and it will come up on my board here, and I will say area code 1234, whichever your area code is, and welcome to the program. And you are live with us. What more could you ask?
Well, we got several things to talk about. Nothing of any great, nothing of any great importance. It isn't of great importance to the world, but it might be of great importance to the people involved. For example, there are 12 killed and three missing in an avalanche on Mount Everest. That people up there, you know, this is what I get so ticked off about. We got all these people go out there, and they're more than happy to climb a mountain and get themselves up there and get themselves lost or half or killed, and we are expected to go rescue everybody. And I'm getting tired of paying to rescue everybody in the world. I mean, just leave them up there. Let them. Well, I don't want to say it that way because it sounds terrible. It doesn't mean any difference. But just let them stay there and figure out how to get out there by themselves. I mean, if people were more interested in taking care of themselves, then we'd have less people up there on the mountains and things. And I'm tired of it. I'm just absolutely tired of it. So we've got that problem.
Yeah, thank you for that compassionate moment.
Yes. I don't know why I've always been that way.
It's called taking responsibility. I mean, you're supposed to take some type of tracking device or whatever that people can locate you. It's called being responsible, you know. Like, same argument of if you're going to go out on the waters, you take life jackets with you. It's supposed to be uncommon sense.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're going to go up where there's going to be an avalanche, you should have enough intelligence and enough experience or whatever to know where it's going to be one. I mean, avalanches don't just come out of nowhere. I mean, they're pretty close, but they don't come out of nowhere. And you need to know what to do in case you're in one. I mean, there's got to be some sort of experience, but learning curve, some lessons or something.
Well, it makes about as much sense as going to the forest and getting chased by a bear and complaining to the ranger that there's a bear out there.
Right, right.
Being prepared for it.
And I, as far as I'm concerned, I'm for the bear. But anyway.
Well, they'd have to eat too.
What? Well, yeah. I mean, whether they have to eat or not, they don't have to eat us necessarily. They have other things that they can eat. But maybe we're the easiest things to eat because we don't run as fast.
That's true. One thing I wanted to touch on is, our guest just went away, is had the privilege of doing a lot of I Told You So regarding the Obamacare. And one of the things that I brought up in the interim of it, you like those big words? Interim. It just kind of rolls off your tongue. Interim.
Okay.
Yes. I have no idea what it means, but it sounds good. Interim. Anyways, and this is because I've worked a little bit in computers and whatnot, and even worked for a company that makes and sells antivirus software. But going back to the uncommon sense thing, when you have a whole bunch of people putting a lot of information in one spot, as we've seen a lot of times, you know, we've heard of laptops being stolen and people's accounts being compromised. A warning came out from, of all places, of course, the Obamacare website, healthcare.gov, asking people to change their passwords due to the recent vulnerability that was discovered in the open source, OpenSSL code, which is when you go sign on to something and you get that little, it says HTTPS, which is an encryption mode, and you will see a little lockdown using the lower right-hand side of your browser, et cetera. You know, and that's more common when you're putting in, like, your credit card number or any other personal information. You're supposed to look for that anyways, not just HTTP:, but HTTPS:. Well, anyways, a lot of the stuff on the Internet is open source, and a lot of companies, Amazon, U.S. government, and others utilize that, and part of the advantages of open source is that the coders, the people that write the code themselves, a lot of them are, some are professional, some are doing it as a hobby, they check each other. Well, there's this vulnerability that came out called Heartbleed, which originated as open source or in the open source community, somehow got past the checks and balances and wasn't discovered till about 2 weeks ago. And so one of the things that it does is that it compromises the compromises the accounts themselves, making you more vulnerable. So once again, all the information you give to the government for the required mandated Obamacare, which not only, you know, you enter your name, address, social security number, and all your other pertinent healthcare information, and where they also have your IP address and everything they need to know about you, is now vulnerable to everybody else, and so they send out notices to change your passwords.
Well, you know, I'm just concerned that anyone feels that they can go online and keep it a secret or keep secrets or do anything that's, I mean, the thing is, going online is an open book.
It is.
And like it or not, you are giving everything to whoever wants to look at it. And some people are more familiar with the Internet and how to do it and things than other people. I mean, to the average person, what may be lost and what may not be readable or even accessible to other people is just there with no problem at all. So for you, if you're going online, and I also know people who leave their computers on all the time. They leave their computer on 24 hours a day. And if you've got something stolen off your computer, that's tough luck, because if your computer is on, it is susceptible to anybody who wants to go after it.
Exactly. And your computer, like Cliff said, just the power being on, because every computer that I've got, although I haven't bought one in a couple of years, but one of the first things I do, I go into the communication or LAN settings, and most of the time there is a switch, soft switch or whatever, click the button, called Wake on LAN, L-A-N. And what that means is that while your computer is, hibernating or locked out or whatever, somebody can dial in and from the back door, so to speak, and get into your computer. So one of the first things I recommend is turn that off, and it kind of helps reduce the remote access. It doesn't eliminate it because there's so much going on in the background, it's really ridiculous. And as far as being able to capture what's happening, there's key logging software that can be installed. You wouldn't even know it. A lot of antivirus software is designed to ignore it. That was one of the biggest complaints from businesses that I supported, that they installed this software to keep an eye on their employees, and the antivirus software caught it, and they wanted us to patch it so that, they could spy and not be detected. But, there's just the other thing that is really easy to do, and they demonstrated this when I was in college, is it's so easy to intercept what comes out of your computer. I mean, granted, it goes out in packets and everything, but there is free software out there that can capture the packets, capture your software or your passwords. And it's just ultimately amazing. And especially if you're on a wireless network, it makes it even that much easier, because a lot of people don't encrypt their wireless because, they're not aware of it. They just want to connect to the Internet. And even if it's encrypted, it can still be broken pretty easy with just free software that's out there.
Yeah, it's the computer is anything but a secure device. And
right. And
no matter, the only thing I can think of any way to make it a secure device is to make up your own code or something and encrypt your own information in your own code, and only you and whoever you want to knows the answer or the way to get into it, and then only use that very, very seldom, and only leave your computer on when you're using it.
Well, actually, there is a thing called VPN, which is a virtual tunnel. I don't know how to describe it off the top of my head. But there was a company that came up, it was called Secure VPN or something like that, similar. And a VPN basically makes it going through a proxy server. You're going directly to that and using somebody else's server and using the VPN as a secured connection to that. Well, the problem with that is that the company that offers that service, so the theory is so you can't be tracked or eavesdropped on, has gotten the attention of Homeland Security and the NSA network, because they are having trouble, although they, of course, have succeeded, but they've been having trouble tapping into those lines, and so they've been targeting people even more that use those type of services, because they figured that if you're using that type of service, you've got something to hide. And I'm figuring, no, I just don't want people to know, if I'm shopping at Amazon.com, I don't want you eavesdropping. I mean, even if I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't want you eavesdropping.
Well, see, that's the thing. The thing is, even if you invent your own security code, if the government happens to be listening or watching or checking at one time or another, they're going to wonder what's going on, and they're going to find out. And so, you're damned if you do or damned if you don't. So let's face it. Let's just not use it as a secure medium. I mean, if you really want to get something to someone and make sure that they don't have somebody listening in, perhaps you better write them a letter or go to their house or do something,
Well, actually, since you mentioned that, Russia, after Snowden incident, actually started getting away from using computers for communicating and went back to... Now, this is, you're going to have to go to the Smithsonian and check this out, typewriters. Because they said that, the only way that you can intercept a typewritten message is to actually intercept the paper itself or the ribbon.
Well, that's depending on the typewriter you use. I know when I was working in the, how do I want to say this, way back when I first started in radio and finding typewriters. Basically, this was back in the 60s,
That's back when you personally knew Marconi, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And we had typewriters, but they were electronic typewriters, and they did have memory, believe it or not. I mean, unless you have a mechanical, really, really old, simple piece of typewriter, you're still stuck because this was the 60s, and they were already using typewriters with memory in them,
right.
And which makes it a lot easier and a lot more convenient because you can type it in type one thing in there, you know, how are you? And the next time you need a how are you, you can just click two buttons or something and you can get it. And
it's easier, which the old editing thing was whiteout, and no, it does not work on a computer screen if you're
That's the thing. So you got to either go way, way back, or you still don't expect any privacy. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's one of those things. We're it's just a complete different world than what it used to be.
Well, and speaking of privacy, back in when phones were actually tethered to something, you know, people could more freely roam around without being tracked. Now, the majority of people and even kids have some sort of a communications device or cell phone. And every cell phone, I don't care if it's a flip phone, anything that communicates with a cell tower can be tracked by triangulation. In fact, some police departments even have a thing where they can simulate a cell tower in order to home in on an individual or to intercept traffic, but mainly more so to triangulate when they're trying to locate somebody.
Yeah, they do that all the time. And it's true. You are stuck to a signal. I mean, no matter where you go, that's what it does. Signal from somewhere tracks your phone and connects to it. And it doesn't make any difference where you go. Anywhere in the United States, just about, there are certain little areas, perhaps, where cell phones don't work, but there aren't very many of them anymore.
Okay.
And when you go there, the system finds you. It literally tracks you down and connects with your cell phone to make your cell phone work. So if your cell phone is working, people know where you are.
Yep, that's how they're able to, you can roam freely and somebody just dials a number and that's how it knows within seconds where you're at. Because it's constantly communicating, especially when you're going from cell to cell to cell. The point is that, you know, most people, like I said, most people have a cell phone now. And so, I mean, they were talking about the mark of the beast and being able to track everybody. Well, we just voluntarily did it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because something I watched in television, and this was a couple of years ago because the people have learned how to do it. But the basic thing is if you have your cell phone on and sitting beside your desk there and you're near a computer or various and sundry other things that it will work, but your cell phone checks in every so often, just about every 2 minutes or 3 minutes or so. I don't know how often it is, and it's probably different for different systems. But your phone automatically checks in that often. And it makes a noise when it checks in. And I know on television and on network television, people were quite upset because people would have their telephone in their pocket or beside them on the desk, and it would start making this noise. And I could always tell what the noise was. It was just their cell phone checking in with the system. And it took probably 6 months before people realized what was happening and made sure the cell phone was either off or in another room or something so that it didn't do that. And it was kind of funny to me because you'd be sitting there and you'd hear this horrible noise all of a sudden right in the middle of a newscast or right in the middle of what someone was saying. And it was just hilarious to me. I knew what it was, but not very many people it seems did.
Exactly. Well, the problem is not when we switched over to digital. Analog was really bad for that because analog had a little bit more power, but digital requires more cell phones. Or more cell towers, excuse me. But here's the thing, too, that even when you have your cell phone turned off, it's still communicating with the cell service, the cell sites.
Well, it depends on how much you decide is off. No, if the power is off to the cell phone, then it shouldn't be communicating to anything.
Well, there's always power to it. It's just like, unless it has a hard off switch, which most cell phones do not.
That's true.
Something's got to be alive in there so it can sense that button and act accordingly. So So it's just not running full power, but it is running power in there. The only way you're going to get off completely is to take the battery out and let everything charge down in there.
I've got a cell phone, thank God, that actually has a hard off switch. So when I turn it on, it takes it like about 45 seconds to actually come on because of the fact it has to power up inside the telephone, and then it has to go out and find what network it's working with and listen to the network before it can actually come on and tell you it's ready. So I don't mind that. I don't mind that extra 30, 40 seconds, 50 seconds. Doesn't kill me. I'll live with that.
Well, that's okay, but things are going to be like even more available, like Google Glass, which is Google's coming out and letting it out to the market now instead by invitation only. Well, still kind of invitation only, even though there's knockoffs on it for $1,300. And they want people to – what Google Glass is, it's a set of glasses that has a heads-up display built into it. And it works with your cell phone through Bluetooth. And it's kind of like basically, well, it's a very small.
Bluetooth is going to get full soon. How much can you do on Bluetooth? How wide a bandwidth is that? My God, I mean everything is working on Bluetooth now.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the Bluetooth range is only
that's true.
30 feet. So, and it's encrypted or locked to the device itself. So that way, and thanks to digital communications. Now, that's why you can have a room full of people, each of them using a Bluetooth headset, and the other one's not going to know about the other one. So it's you're not going to get crosstalk in there.
And you are not going to, or can you?
No, because you have to pair it to that unit. Now, that's not saying that somebody with the proper software or equipment won't be able to intercept.
That was what I was wondering. It's because if it's not. If it can't be done right now, give it 2 or 3 weeks and somebody will figure it out.
Right. Well, that's just the thing, is that anything that goes over the air can be
excuse me.
Thank you for that. can be captured and decrypted. You used to work in security. You understand that part.
And the thing is, it's the kids. The kids find it a challenge to be able to do that. They don't care whether they're doing it for any reason. They don't care if they're doing anything wrong. It's a challenge to do it, so they do it. And consequently, the adults then sit back and say, this kid's done it. I'm going
right.
to find
well,
out.
It's kind of the running joke in the computer community that if you can't figure it out, is there a 9-year-old in the house?
Mm-hmm. Really? I've been using 9-year-olds for years. And that, of course, that can get me in trouble, too.
To help anyway. The computers and stuff, yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Just remember, everything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law, and we are being recorded because of the archives. And speaking of recording and archives, if you are listening to the archives, again, I'd like to invite you, if you have a comment or question or are subjects you'd like us to talk about, since this is kind of opinion radio, send us emails, talk@krbnradio.com, Facebook.com/krbnradio. We do have a website, krbnradio.com. And right now, live and in color, 646-721-9887 is the number to call. The lines are open. I know because I'm looking at the board.
We'd be more than happy to have you join in. And if you want to change the subject of anything at all, there's nothing that's so important that we want to stick with it now. And the thing is, if you want to call and change the subject, then we can go back to our subject when you were through, if we decide we want to. But this, I don't know of any subject that we have on that's of significant interest that we necessarily need to go back to it. But okay. There's anything we'll talk about anything. And even if I don't know anything about it, I'll talk about it, and I'll give you great opinions on it.
Yes, and just because, don't worry if your topic is better than our topic. We can live with that.
Well, almost always your topic is better than our topic.
646-721-9887. And there's plenty of time to talk about what you want to talk about. And like Cliff says, we have opinions on everything and anything. And if we don't know what we're talking about, that's never stopped us before.
Chelsea's having a child.
She is.
Chelsea Clinton and her husband, Mark Mavzinski. It's that's a name.
Yeah. It's, that's probably why she didn't take it. Vote for him as Mavzinski.
Yeah, really. And, you know, well, of course, it's hard to say, but people have unusual names, and somebody that in this particular case has a pretty run-of-the-mill, I don't know that Clinton is a run-of-the-mill name, but it's not that bad. It's easy to pronounce, at least.
True. But, in fact, I'm going to take a quick poll and, you know, the people in the studio here. Anybody cares that Clinton's having a baby, raise your hands. Hello? Okay. I take that as a no. But,
well,
speaking of, let me throw something here real quick.
Well, the thing gets to me before you do that.
Yes.
Did you know how old she is?
How old is she?
I mean, I can remember her, Chelsea Clinton, since day one. She's 34. She's old.
So are we. What's your point?
Well, that's my point. We are really, really old.
Yes.
Anyway, back to what you were going to
say. Well, what I was going to say is that isn't it interesting because, you know, again, Chelsea is where she's at thanks to connections. Oh, you know, hey, you got a recommendation? Yeah, my dad was a president. You know, but how many people are getting into high office, you know, either elected or non-elected offices just because they're related to the people? I mean, it really gets back to, you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just like the Bushes, you know, we have two Bushes that were president, and they're trying to push the third one, who is so...
But you see, that's the thing with Chelsea. I mean, she's been around, and we've been around, and we kind of know her from as family. I mean, she's been around a long time, and so have we, and we've all grown up with her.
Yeah.
Because her family's been in the news, definitely, but in politics or involved in something that we remember forever.
Yeah.
I mean, the poor girl, I mean, that's actually bad, too, because I wonder what kind of a chance she's had to have a regular life. Probably been a bit rough.
Well, yeah, I mean, the same argument that famous people have. You know, in fact, I can't remember who it was that said it one time. I think it was, who was the girl that played Pretty Woman?
I don't know.
It'll come to me. But I think it was her that commented that, you know, being famous is pretty lonely because people are afraid to approach her. Of course, the two big hunky guys, that, you know, her bodyguards kind of also...
have something to do with that.
Have something to do with that, too. Yeah. But, you know, they think that, you know, hey, these people are famous and they got, you know, the... lifestyles of the rich and famous type of thing going on in there. And all right, so I can't do him. anyway.
Hillary Clinton's kind of glad. She's decided she likes the idea of being a grandmother to be, or a grandparent.
You know, I think that's a perfect role for her.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think she should just kind of say, okay, you know, I was wife of the president. I was secretary of state, you know. It's time to enjoy, you know, life. You know, the idea of running for president, although, yes, granted, the Democrats would love to say, well, you know, if you don't agree with the president, you must be sexist. But, well, that's why they're pushing to get her in there, because they love this thing about don't criticize the president. He's a Teflon, because if you criticize the president, no matter what it is, you are racist. So they're enjoying that, and since they can't do that unless they get another candidate of color or whatever, but see, they're already on to that. So they want to push Clinton to get in there. So anything you disagree with her, you must be sexist. You got something against women, Cliff?
Well, I tell you, with the president that we got now, I can disagree with him mostly because he doesn't know anything. He doesn't do anything. He is a run. But, I mean, you can't help but criticize him. You can't help but talk about him. He's pretty sad.
He's not qualified.
For anything.
The worst part about that is that, besides the fact he's not qualified, is that we got things going on in the world right now that needs a leader. And that's one thing he is not. Right now he's grandstanding and enjoying the limelight of his title. Because nobody really cares about him. They just like the fact that he's the president. You know, as soon as he's out of there, he'll go sell his books, make his speeches or whatever, and he'll just be a forgotten whatever. Nobody cares.
I know, that's what we say, but on the same token, for some reason or other, we said this before, but we still reelected him. That's scary.
Well, the reason why it was scary is, you know, we had people that they were asking more for themselves, like the free Obama phone type of thing. And
well,
and on the Republican side, the Republican side was a joke. I mean, they were totally disorganized. The candidate that Herman Cain looked really strong and, you know, came out of left field, so to speak, and actually got noticed very quickly and a lot of support. Well, they hit him with both barrels to the point that he finally withdrew. And then the other candidate that they threw up in there was just kind of like...
Well, that's a matter of opinion. I happen to think we had a couple of good candidates. It's just that they kind of gave up. They didn't...
They gave up and
didn't realize
they had money or
they had money.
Well, some of them, I can't remember who the one was, but he was doing a kind of pretty strong, but he just ran out of money. But, you know, if you don't have the resources to do it or the connections to do it, no matter how great you are, you know, the media is just going to decide, you know, you're not worth including. I'll give you a good example. Locally here in Oregon, I know a lady that she's running for U.S. Senate. And the two people, the two major people, and the reason why they're major is because both of them have money. One of them, Monica Webby, has just raised over $1 million to kind of help her campaign. And because she's a doctor, has the money and resources to do this. Joe Ray Perkins has been on the show a couple of times. She's raised just under $10,000 and basically is a one- or two-man crew right now because, again, she's not wealthy. And because of that, when there are seminars or forums or whatever, she doesn't get invited because she's not considered a major contender. So, you know, we'll be – Monica will be in the – I can't – remember who the other one is, Jason Conger or somebody like that. They're the ones that get invited. So even if somebody is really, really great and they just don't have the, you know, they're not millionaires and they don't have the financial resources, they don't get put in office.
Well, I don't know. We just, I think we've got to somehow, somewhat, it's our fault because we didn't push hard enough for our candidate.
No.
We didn't do enough for our candidate, and it's our candidate's fault because they didn't ask enough. So it's a little of everything, but the thing is, it's not going to happen again because the next election we've got coming up, I think is going to be pretty well the opposite of what we've had before because we've had such poor responses from the people that we've put in there to this point in the last two or three elections. That we've got to do something to change it.
Well, I would agree. I wish I could agree with you, but the people I talk with, for one, a lot of people don't like to talk about politics. You have to, especially with Obamacare. It's in your face now. You know, you can ignore it as much as you want to, but it's in your face. Secondly, and this just annoys the hell out of me, is there's one guy at work, for example. He's a Democrat. And all he says, yeah, you Republicans this, you Republicans that, you know, doing the following Obama's stance about everything bad in the world happens because of Republicans. No, first of all, people don't follow what the Democrat and Republican party was originally, their beliefs, would originally stand for. People don't do that. They're in it for themselves. But it's just an excuse, you know, while we're, you know, you Democrats are this, you Republicans are that. And they won't look beyond that. So they elect a person based on, well, okay, well, he's a Democrat, I'm a Democrat, I'm just going to, you know, I don't care what he stands for, he's a Democrat, I'll just go ahead and click the box.
Well, I sort of disagree because the different parties do have a major program that they're trying to push. They do stand for certain things, and that should make a difference. But the thing is, you don't have to. Well, in this state, I guess you do have to in the primaries, but in the actual major election, you don't have to have a particular Democratic, or you can vote for one, for vice president as one and president as the other, and you can do whatever you want to. But the thing is, you don't have to vote them in. You don't have to vote anybody in. You can vote. There's dozens of candidates. There's almost always more than one or two candidates for each position. I mean, sometimes there's not in small elections, but in the major elections, there's always several choices. And the thing is, there's no choice called none of the above.
Right.
That's the only problem I have. But the thing is, that's not the case either. You gotta have somebody vote for somebody, because somebody's going to win. And if you had a vote for none of the above, they can't win. That none of the above can win. So consequently, you got to vote for one or the other. And you know, I often go the opposite direction. If I know about candidate A or candidate B, because they're so well known, if there's a C or D that I don't know anything about, I'll vote for them just to be different, just to tell them I don't like the two that are involved in running.
Yeah, that's you're none of the above vote.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't have a none of the above, because somebody has to, you know, if none of the above wins, and then somebody has to take the office. I suppose I get upset because we have too many elections anyway. So, I was going to say we could have a runoff election, but I don't want to do that either, because that costs money. That costs an awful lot of money to have an election.
Well, what I think, and I've said this from day one, is that it's too easy for a candidate to just claim anything they want to. You know, like I've always called Obama the car salesman. You know, say anything they want to get into office. And a really good used car salesman can read his audience and, you know, tell them what they want. But they know all good and well that once in, unless they do something that's treasonous or are really, really bad, they're there for their term. It's almost impossible to get rid of them. And that's what I've said, that we should follow Parliament's rules a little bit. Imagine, you know, I mean, it may hinder some of the efficiency of the government if we had a vote of no confidence, but on the other side of the coin, you know, you won't, it makes them more accountable to their position and to why they're there.
You know, I've watched these things on television where they show Parliament in action and all that sort of thing, people making their argument for a specific thing, a specific idea. But if you get enough people that say no, then to hell with it.
Right.
And that's what we need to have. Why not necessarily need to vote the first person clear out of office, but we can tell them, no, we're not going to go along with that idea. That's a stupid idea. You come up with something better, and at least give them a hard time and make them think about what they're doing, so they can't get in there and just do anything they want. But that's the problem. Once a person is in office, we let them do anything they want. We don't open our mouths. We just say, okay, well, they're done, and now we've got to just let it happen. Well, that's not true. That's not true. We don't have to let it happen. If there's enough argument about the case, we can do something about it. There's different programs that we can do to repeal their decisions and get them out of office.
Well, yeah, and there are a lot of people that do the writing campaigns and the call-ins, you know, thanks to talk shows to let people be aware of it. And the government hates that because they don't like people getting involved, but
like people thinking for themselves.
Well, yeah, just like with Syria. I mean, the president wanted to go over there and do his thing. You know, they say, well, no boots on the ground. Yeah, bull. And there was such a huge letter-writing campaign and phone calls come in that they've actually tabled the idea for a while. And they were actually kind of shocked, you know, and they tried saying, well, it was in the best interest of the United States that we get involved over there. And they were surprised that so many people came up and said, no, we don't want to go into another war, especially over something like that.
Especially over Syria.
Right.
But, I mean, the thing is, Syria and Iraq are together. Syria and Iraq are doing things together. They're pals and buddies and everything else. I don't want anything to do with Iraq at this particular point, and I don't want anything to do with Syria. I don't believe we should have boots on the ground. I don't believe we should have boots off the ground. I don't think we should be there at all. And I think we should just let the two of them do their own thing all by themselves and just get the hell out of the way. And that's the only problem I have with – we have so many places that we're getting our toes involved in, and we shouldn't be. We have – you know, I understand that we need to have I don't want to say – we don't want to control the world, but we do want to control the world. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to control everything that everybody thinks and everybody thinks they say. And the thing is, we're going about it the wrong way. We're trying to step in there and
we are, and I'm sad to say that we are ran by the corporate hierarchy. It's all about money. In fact, to the point that we're even willing to sell ourselves out and sell our nation out. I mean, look at, for example, you know, we've wanted to go over and help other countries to help secure their borders, et cetera. But ours are so porous, and which makes us so vulnerable, and they're pushing more and more to invite more people in who do not want to go through the front door, which, of course, does several things. For one, you know, unlike Jeb Bush says, well, they come over here for love, which is bull. But, you know, anybody that walks in, but the whole question is why? Well, they're saying that, you know, it's money, you know, cheap labor. Well, you make them legal, they're going to be just like everybody else. But, you know, what's the bottom line on this? But the whole point where I'm going there is that you're selling out the security and the sovereignty of our nation for the dollar.
Well, I don't quite understand how we're getting dollars out of the Syria problem or Iran problem. Iraq, I guess it is, rather.
We have people that build technology. How much, you know, you were in the military. How much does a missile cost?
What does that have to do with Syria or Iraq?
Well, if we go over there, we have to utilize our equipment. You know, does the government, how much stuff does the government itself make or how much do they rely on contractors?
Well, they rely on contractors always.
Okay.
The government doesn't make anything. I mean, the government is the military. The government is there only to fight, to do, you know, they're not there to build things. They contract everything out.
So how lucrative are government contracts?
Well, I don't quite understand how to connect a government contract with Syria. I mean, we aren't doing let me say this. We are, but we shouldn't be. That's my point.
Right.
It's doing something in Syria, anything that would require a contractor to have anything built. I mean, we shouldn't need to put any money into Syria. That's the idea.
No, where I'm going with that is that, you know, even if we move anything, it costs money. Somebody's making a profit off it. And that profit, although, you know, the government or the money is being spent, you know, it's our money. As somebody said once, and I can't remember who it was because they were elected officials, said that we need a war to help the economy. Well, here's the thing, is that, and this surprised me. I think it was in the Bush era where they had the Gang of Eight that was supposed to kind of help do something with the budget that they came up with. And what surprised me is that the money that was starting to come in from large companies donating to the Gang of Eight, to whose whole sole purpose was to, I think, I can't remember if there was a time limit or whatever, but to come up with recommendations. I was just kind of puzzled going, okay, why are these major corporations pouring money into the Gang of Eight when it's not really, it's just people that are already there, senators and whatever, they're already there. They're already elected. They're in office. Why are people funneling money into this Gang of Eight thing?
I think that's a self-answered question because they are in office and they're funneling. They're doing. They're the ones doing the funneling.
Okay, but I mean, just to keep that money. Does the senator get to keep that money? Because
the contractors are not giving it to the senators. If we're building weapons with it, the contractor that's building the weapons.
No, that has nothing to do with weapons. Is what I'm saying. The Gang of Eight, which is for the put together to help analyze the budget and come up with a solution. Huge corporations are donating millions of dollars to the Gang of Eight, which I don't know what happened to the money or for what purpose of their donation was. And that's why I was saying I was surprised that they were receiving a donation, period, because except for the fact that you're trying to sway, you know, well, if you're going to do budget cuts and, you know, don't cut us out. You know, but again, when they make a donation like that, where does the money go to? Does it go into the coffers? Does it go to the senators themselves, which I think is called bribery? You know, what, you know, how's a, let me see if I can phrase this question a lot better. Let's say you're Senator Cliff and you're up there in Congress or whatever, you're up there on the, doing your Senate thing. And I decide I want to give, I own XYZ Corporation. It's a multinational corporation. And I decide I want to donate out of the goodness of my heart. I'm going to give a couple $1 million to you for your campaign. Okay. Now, even though there are laws that restrict how much money a company can give, and that obviously goes way beyond what the law says, except for giving you money out of the goodness of my heart, what do I expect back out of it?
Well, you're donating the money to try to form my opinion as to something or other, who, whatever. But it's the chances are I am actually pocketing the money.
Right.
To be honest with you, an awful lot of people like that, I believe, are pocketing the money. They'll give some of it to some sort of a thing and make a big splash about the fact that they gave it to whatever. But I think they're pocketing the money. And I don't think there's anything, unfortunately, wrong with that. They keep changing the rules on donations and money that is given for anything. They change the rules on it. Every year almost, it seems like they change the rules because they've decided that they didn't do it right the first time or the second or fourth or tenth time. So they'll make it different because they haven't got it right yet. And so consequently, as far as I'm concerned, it's too late. We're just giving – actually, by changing the rules all the time, all we're doing is just distributing the money in a wider swath is what we're doing. And people don't realize that. A lot of people don't realize that. They think, gee, I'm giving this to my congressman, so consequently he's doing good things with it. Chances are he's doing great things with it, you know, buying a new car and new house and things like that.
Yeah, like the stimulus package where we had to study the migration of snails.
You know, everybody keeps bringing these little packages like that up all the time. We're talking about little $10,000 things, $100,000 things. It's so small that it really doesn't mean anything as far as I can see. It's the ones that we need to do with big bucks that makes a big change.
Yeah, you're right. I was just going to say that one of the things that Obama said when the stimulus package first came out is that he warned states that they were going to be watching it closely and not to come up with these little ridiculous things, and they did anyways, and nothing happened.
Never
but the credit, though, is that, you know, during that time, in fact, back when I used to hang out in my 20s, 30s, you know, I used to hang out with people from the University of Oregon that were more influential. We were joking one time because we were at a pizza parlor having pizza, and I noticed, you know, you think that when you take something and you cut it in half, well, you got two pieces, cut that in half, you got four pieces. You always got an even number. And I noticed that because I got nothing better to do. I was counting slices and always came up in an odd number. And I was saying, you know, I bet you we could probably get a grant to research this. And the guy responds is, seriously, we could.
Oh.
Which, of course, I volunteered to case study because I love pizza.
I would be quite interesting. I don't understand why or how you could come up with odd pieces, but that's okay.
It's one of those phenomenon that I guess will never be answered. Mysteries of the universe. Just like if a really strange happened, I'm going to tell you a little story here. Really strange happened. You know, we were talking about cell phones earlier. You know, depending on what you touch on that cell phone, a sequence of numbers, and I discovered, you know, that during a certain time of day, typically around on Saturdays, around 4 o'clock to 5:30 Pacific time, that if you touch these numbers, 646-721-9887, that something really odd happens.
Yeah, a little number one lights up on your screen of your computer.
Yes.
And lights up there, and then you have to sit around and figure out what the hell they do now.
Exactly.
646-721-9887 was the telephone number she was promoting there. 646-721-9887. And that's a number to talk to us. And we'd like to hear from you and like to hear you talk. Actually, I don't care how you talk. It's just we'd like to talk to you.
Exactly. Do you like the way I just kind of led into that?
That was sneaky. That was really sneaky. Yes.
And what's really fun on this program is that even if you just call up and say hi, is where people have called from. I think I know we've had people back east. We've had other countries too, didn't we?
Yeah, we've had a couple different countries call in. We'd like to hear from somebody a long ways away. Anybody who speaks English from anywhere and wants to call, give us a call.
Yeah, I mean, you can speak another language, but I guarantee you it'll be a one-sided conversation.
Yeah, unfortunately. Actually, it'd be a two-sided conversation, but it's not a two-way conversation because right. We each be talking about our own separate things.
Yeah, no offense, anybody. It's just kind of the way it works.
It's just our intelligence ratio doesn't include other languages.
Yes, I am monolanguaged.
Monolanguaged, really?
Yes. I do not speak stereo. Anyways, 646-721-9887. We still got some time remaining in the program if you'd like to give us a call on this or anything else you'd like to talk about.
We haven't talked too much about the earthquake, and that's kind of scary. It's a 7.5 earthquake, and that's not a small earthquake. That's quite a large earthquake, and this is right in Mexico, and it's just near Acapulco, and there are a lot of people that live in Acapulco, and a whole lot more that are visiting there because this is everybody takes a vacation. Everybody wants to take their vacation in Acapulco, but they had and it was felt as a matter of fact in Mexico's capital, Mexico City. So it was a big thing, and it's mainly tourists that are shaken up. I guess people in Mexico, they're not accustomed to accustomed I'm getting out to many perhaps they have more shakes than we do. There's not much. There aren't many shakes around here at all, and yet Mexico City and Mexico seems to have an awful lot. So maybe they're more accustomed to it all happening in a building swaying and things like that. But I do know that having looked at some of the pictures, however, of what happens to them, that their buildings still aren't being built to the necessity of standing in the middle of an earthquake, because you look at them and the whole walls fall down and collapse, and they look more like they're just made out of, I don't want to even say cement. It looks like they're made out of mud, and I'm sure they're not. They don't look like they're mud when they're up in the building, but unless they're a really tall building, they fall apart, and it looks like just a bunch of mud laying there. And unfortunately, Mexico doesn't have that many tall buildings as we do. And I think when they're building a building real, real tall, that they probably do meet some sort of requirements that those smaller buildings don't meet. But boy, oh boy, it makes a mess out of things. And these people, there's a whole bunch of people that are involved. And I mean, it's not just a couple people, and we're talking about 6,000 people had buildings destroyed in Mexico City, and you know, it's scary. I don't know. There's a lot more. You never hear about earthquakes here. I mean, when was the last time you felt an earthquake here? I don't.
Oregon.
Here in Oregon or in Eugene or. I mean,
yeah, but that's just because of our location. But, you know, I blame all these earthquakes on the Republicans.
Okay. Whatever's fair. I wish as a Republican that I could figure out how to make sure that earthquakes hit other people.
Well, I'm sure that it's, you know, as they claim, there's a weather machine, you know, up in Alaska that changes the weather and causes earthquakes, and you know, and then of course we have to, according to the Obama administration, a lot of these earthquakes are being caused by excessive fracking.
Okay, I won't frack at all anymore.
That's right, and that's if you give a frack about that. But
the thing is, I don't think it's fracking. I don't think it's anything that we're doing. You know, that's like the climate change. They keep saying that we're involved and we're responsible for climate change. I don't believe that for a minute. I think climate change was going to happen whether we were here or not here, and it's going to happen whether we have anything to do with it. And they keep telling us, okay, well, we can fix that. It'll only take us about 100 years. Well, that's true. We can fix it in 100 years. We can change things so much that we can make it go the other way. But that's not fixing it. That's just changing it. And we're, you know, instead of changing it one way, we're changing it another way. And that isn't accomplishing anything as far as I'm concerned. And we should spend more of our time and more of our money in learning how to live with it. I mean, things are going to change. The oceans are going to change. They're going to be in a different place. They're going to move, like it or not. And we're going to have to learn how to live with it. And so that's what we should be doing, is spending our time getting up money and getting up interest. As much as anything, interest in what to do to live with what we've got. Because I don't think we're going to change it back. We're going to change it in any direction other than what's, well, we're going to have to change us, not the climate. We're going to have to change our attitude and our way of responding to the climate rather than actual climate itself. Because there's nothing we can do with that. I don't believe that there's anything we can do at any time. Maybe a small bit, but very small. The thing is, we've been fixing, you know, changing the emissions of our cars and the emissions of our factories and things like that. And I am well aware that we, being the United States, and the other countries are not doing this necessarily. But I don't think there's anything we can do to make things that much different as to fix anything.
Well, we could go back to the horse-drawn carriage, which, of course, I do not want to even think about where they're going to shove the emission controls at.
Well, that's the thing. That's not going to fix things. That's just going to change things again. If we went back to horse-drawn carriages, we'd have to have thousands and thousands and thousands more horses. I mean, think of how many automobiles we've got on the roads today, and if we had to replace those with horses, are we actually gaining anything? Yeah, we're not. You got to figure the horse is actually worse than the car. Like it or not, the horse is worse than the car because the horse keeps eating and excreting, whether they're getting us anywhere or not.
Right.
Even if they're just standing there waiting for us and not doing anything at all, they're still doing these things. Where a car, at least you shut it off and it stops.
In fact, speaking of which, I wonder if back in the before the horse's carriage, if they actually came up with an age limit before you could drive a horse.
No, because you read all kinds of stories, and I read a lot. But I mean, of little kids, you know, going someplace, and as soon as they could ride and sit on the horse and stay on the horse, they were allowed to stay on the horse. And it's only us as idiots that have decided. Well, I won't say as idiots because let's face it, there are. Well, now I'll take that back. The idea was as soon as the kid was old enough to stay on the horse and to be able to and guide the horse and make the horse do what he wants him to do, he was allowed to ride the horse. Well, we should do that with cars. As soon as he's old enough to see above the steering wheel and to get his feet on the floor and to make the car go where he wants it to go, and then we teach him how, of course, then he should be allowed to.
Well, can you imagine that if you apply today's regulations, if the car had never been invented and we were still using horses, you know, you'd have saddles with seatbelts on them because you don't want people falling off. You know, your collisions or whatever, you'd probably have, I don't know, everybody probably be required to wear a helmet and knee pads. And horse climbing up that distance, if you don't use your 3 points of contact, you know, you can slip off the horse. And then, of course, you know, get the back injuries because of the, you know, the back bucking of the horse and how dangerous the horse could actually be. And then you've got the emission standards and everything else. So in other words, if you apply today's 21st century's regulations back to the horse,
I would think that we probably have learned enough by now that we could control ourselves and allow the horse a little more dignity than that.
Heck, people can't even, you know, walk and chew gum literally anymore. I mean, common sense goes right out the window. I mean, even to the point that several years ago we had a teenager here in Springfield that was killed because she had earbuds in her ears, listening to music, texting. And now even, I can't remember if I had to be taught this or if I figured it out on my own because I felt I was kind of a smart type of kid and knew that cars are big and it would hurt if they hit me type of thing, that when I went to across the street, I would stop and make sure that there was nothing that was going to squash me coming. And apparently that type of common sense thing is totally gone now, so people can't figure it out for themselves.
I will have to admit, I have actually stepped out on, and not necessarily right in front of a car, but I have stepped out without watching, without looking to see if there's a car, specifically because of the same thing. We're talking about the listening to different devices or whatever, and I was busy and involved in listening to a radio or listening to a tape recorder or something like that. And at the same, the big problem, of course, is if you're like listening to a tape player, you may be pushing a button or looking to find the button to push, and you don't pay attention to where you're going, and you can get into trouble. And I have been known to get real close to being run over a couple of times before. It took me that long to realize that I was an idiot and perhaps should pay attention to where I was going. But I will have to admit, I've done it.
Yeah. And who do you feel sorry for?
Well, I don't feel sorry for anybody. But if anybody, I feel sorry for the person who was driving the vehicle.
Right.
Because they're the ones that are involved in this. And don't expect a person to come trotting off the sidewalk and running right in front of your car. I mean, there's supposed to be a limit there. There's supposed to be a demarcation there somewhere where one or the other is supposed to be watching for the other one. And if I'm on the high sidewalk, I'm supposed to be watching for the cars. So, and if I'm in front of a crosswalk, then I can imagine that the car is supposed to be watching for me. But I wasn't. I have this tendency as a teenager, of course, I'm well aware that I can't be killed. And so, consequently, I just can do anything I want to. So I take off and go across in the middle of the road.
Was that also the same theory that you could fly as well? And how well that worked out for you?
Exactly. No, I only dreamt about flying.
Away!
No, I didn't think I could fly, but I did dream about it. I did dream about it, and it was weird.
Yeah.
And not only was it weird in my dreams, not only was I flying, but I was usually naked and flying for some reason.
Okay.
I don't know why. Don't have the slightest idea, but that's the situation.
As he flies through the air naked and his butt crack whistling. So.
Okay. Whatever, sure. Anyway, what were we talking about?
I'm going to invite people to call in and save us, 646-721-9887, which proves once again we will talk about anything and go anywhere, because this is an opinion program, And a lot of us have opinions, and we'd like to share your opinion so you can share our opinion and disagree with our opinion, because we'll probably disagree with your opinion. Even if we agree with your opinion, we'll probably disagree with your opinion, because, you know what, it's just our opinion.
Well, it doesn't make much sense for us to all sit around and agree with each other, because if we all agree with each other, there's nothing left to say.
No, I agree with you on that.
Okay. Anyway, so consequently, if you're coming in and have an opinion about something, which I'd love to have you have, I'll do my very best to disagree with you.
Yes.
Yes.
And that was, okay, I'm going to tell him. Your secret for your success in the radio business was, no matter how much they agreed with you.
I disagree with them.
You disagreed with them. There you go, folks.
Yes.
Behind the scenes of a talk show host.
I did that for years. And we always had. And, of course, that was one of the things that actually you have to know more about, and you have to research your subject more to be able to disagree, because you got to know everything about the subject. You got to know enough to agree and enough to disagree. And that's why, well, I don't know. I want to say I did well with that, but I don't want to say I did either.
Yeah.
But I had fun.
All right, if you're in politics, you have to be a really good magician, because you want to, you know, distract people over here while you're doing something else over there.
Yeah, and that's not easy to do when all has to be done on the radio.
That's true. You can't see your hands that well.
Yeah, you can't, you know, sleight of hand is kind of hard to do.
Like, don't you see where I'm pointing right now?
Up.
Well, you're close. 646-721-9887. I guess kind of getting back more to semi-serious stuff as we were talking about politics and everything is, I guess in May we got the elections coming up, and obviously I guess what's primaries?
Yeah.
Who are people who even somewhat care get to go in and view their opinion, whether they know what they're talking about or not. But one thing I've noticed is that, especially, you know, more and more people, I mean, like I'll speak for myself, because of costs and because television has become extremely boring, especially when you got on demand, like from the internet. We got rid of our cable about a year and a half ago, and I don't miss it at all. But the downside of it is that unless you listen to the radio, or unless you actually go out and check the news, you know, in other words, you have to go out to it, where before when you watch TV, you know, the 30-second sound bites, wherever, promoting the upcoming news broadcast, you don't really get exposed that much to news anymore. And so when somebody's running for office or there's an issue, unless, you know, it's out on Facebook, you know, it's harder to get the word out, and so it's easier to just kind of ignore what's happening in the world. You know, life sucks, the job sucks. What's on YouTube tonight?
Okay, on YouTube tonight.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've got one here that I was just completely flabbergasted about. This is from Utah State Medical Examiner's Office. They say that there are 7 children that they found in cardboard boxes in a woman's garage. In other words, she had these children. I don't know if how often or how many, at what time that they were all together. No, they weren't all together. But anyway, 7 children that she stuffed into cardboard boxes in her garage and left them there. Now, I it's a good question as how long, because after so long they'd start to smell, I guess, is the best way to put it. But anyway, 7 boxes full of children, or 7 boxes, one child each or whatever, that she just threw these kids away. And this is the mother. This is the mother. I mean, you always hear that the mother takes care of the kids regardless of what happens. She does whatever for the kids, but that's not obviously the case. These kids were there, and FBI found them, and they were – none of the labs in Utah can analyze the type of DNA that they took from the tiny corpses. DNA to reveal the sex of the babies and who the parents are, but it's not unknown when the results will be back. They're taken. This has happened fairly recent, and they haven't had a chance to adjust and find out all the information that they'd like to know. But I guess the seventh baby that she put in the boxes, in one of the boxes, was a stillborn baby, but not all of them. I aren't sure how old any of them were, but they were all that small, all that young. So, but seven, can you imagine that? Seven babies that she took and put in boxes in the garage and left them there. That's just amazing to me that it can possibly happen. I just had to bring that up to your attention. It's just unreal. Myself, I couldn't believe it.
Well, and as we were talking off air on this, is that, I mean, are people still able to just put their children up for adoption if they can't take them or if they don't want them anymore?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, the old, like you mentioned, the old thought of even just leaving the baby on somebody's doorstep or on the doorstep of the police department or something would be done for them. Now, granted, they'd probably come and get you. They'd probably find you and come and get you. But they're going to do that anyway because sooner or later people are going to notice something in the garage because you won't be able to go by the garage without smelling it. But the thing is, you're going to get stuck with this. You're going to get caught at it, whatever it is. You can't do this thing by just sticking a kid in a box and leave them there. I mean, you can't do that. That's just something that can't be done. That's just all there is to it. Sooner or later, you're going to pay for it. So you may as well. I mean, there's got to be something legal done with the thing. I mean, if there's something happened to the child, I mean, if there was something wrong with the child and the child died, you could call the authorities and have nothing happen to you. They would do a little investigating to find out if you had anything to do with it. But if you didn't, if the baby just died, then it's going to be no big thing. But seven of them, after four or five, I'm sure people being the authorities are going to wonder what's going on, because that's an awful lot.
Well, on the other side, and here's speaking of child and child abuse, headline, campaign for a homeless mom who left kids in car during job interview raises $99,000. And she says that basically what happened is that she left a – I'm scanning here. I had it a second ago. The homeless mom was charged with two counts of child abuse after leaving her 2-year-old and 6-month-old unattended in the vehicle while she went for a job interview. It turns out that plain Americans don't condone her actions but emphasize the situation. So it's one of those things about if you don't know anybody, this is my opinion, if you don't know anybody and you need a job, you can't take the kid in for a job interview. It just ain't going to – it's not going to fly.
Right.
But, again, it doesn't say here if the car was – windows were left down or if it was really hot or whatever. But, nowadays – see, when I was growing up as a kid, many times I was home alone and left by myself. No big deal. But nowadays you can't do that.
You weren't 18 months old either.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, even being a teenager, I don't know what age now, but where it's okay for the kids to be unsupervised. But back then it was very common. Nowadays, but I agree with you. Yeah, they are kind of young. A 2-year-old is kind of young to be left alone.
Well, I believe they're still common with latchkey kid that, any time it's even from, 5, 6, 7 years old, you're going to be a latchkey kid, and a lot of kids still are today because everybody has to work. And
right.
Today, nowadays, mom and dad both have to have a job in order to make a living. So that leaves whatever the age the kids are, and starting at a very young age, I'm sure, being latchkey kids. And, that's a part of our society. We just really stuck with that. We don't have any choice. How much money you have and of course, the thing that worries me is so often it's not how much money you have, it's how you want to live your life. So in other words, you may have plenty of money to handle that and be able to take care of your kids and stay home, but for you, that's not enough. You want more money than you've got in no matter what. And so consequently, it depends on your lifestyle that you want to keep up. So.
Well, and that's kind of what's going on here with this one. There was a petition of 11,000 signatures supporting her, and she said that, and it's quoting her, it says, her desperation to provide for herself and for her children and her lack of options led her to take dramatic measures in searching of employment, wrote the petition's author. And, of course, then they also said, too, that what her name's Taylor, needs support and help rather than incarceration and a criminal record that will surely decrease her chances to provide for her children in the future.
Now how did she get caught at this?
Probably, let's see if it says here, probably somebody saw the kids in and turned them in.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, it's hard to say. And these were pretty young kids, so they could have been crying.
Right.
And making a lot of noise. And, of course, the thing that would worry me is, were they old enough to get out of the car? How old did you say they were?
24 months and, let's see, one was, get back to it, a two-year-old and a six-month-old. And here it says that, I guess the person that called in says, my daughter worked as a nurse on a night shift, and one time she went out to the parking lot and she saw a few young children in cars, and she never reported it. How could she? You know, their mother was inside working or something like that. But it depends on how long they were in the cars.
They saw a few young kids.
Yeah, that's what she's calling. I'm scanning the article.
Well, that's interesting because that means that we've got other people who are actually working and leaving their kids in the car. So,
well, like I say, sometimes, now, granted, there are people that have abused that, you know, like even just running into the store for just a minute gets them in trouble because they didn't take the kids with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know, but the idea of thinking of going and putting in an eight-hour shift and leaving the kids in the car, that's a little scary. If that's the only place you've got, see, that's the thing is, we've got a lot of people living in their cars nowadays. I mean, it's not unheard of to have people living in their car. And it's, if you're living in your car, you almost have to leave the kid in the car if you're going to work. And so it's a damned if you do, a damned if you don't thing. So, you know, again, I guess we need to change our system in our society so that there's more options of what to do with the kids in a case like this because, you know, if you go and turn yourself in and explain that you've got to work, you haven't got anybody to take care of the kids, we don't have any options for someone to take care of the kids, I don't believe. And, you know, police can't take care of the kids, and they just take the kids away from you. And that's ridiculous. That doesn't accomplish anything. Well, it does accomplish something for the kids. And it's good and bad, and the kids don't want to be away from their parents and so on. But it's a real hard thing to think about, to kind of think of it.
Yeah. No, it's tough. You know, I've never been a parent. I've hung around with a friend of mine that had a five-year-old when I met her. And it's a lot of work. And then if you're a single parent, which there are a lot of nowadays, to try and arrange for child care and to try and take care of the child and give them some sort of a decent life, I mean, my hat's off to these people. You know, I have enough trouble taking care of myself without.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. That's why I've never had any kids. I've at times when I was doing real well, I have taken in foster kids and lived with them. But the foster kids don't stay with you forever. Generally, they only stay for a year or two and then they go away whatever's done either go back to their parents or whatever. There's lots of reasoning as to where they go. But anyway, that's been my experience, that they only stay for a couple of years. A couple of them I've had for 2 years, and then they went away for a year and came back again. So,
mm-hmm.
But the point is, I was in a fairly decent position in my life as far as a place to live and money and things to take care of them. If I wasn't, I would decline helping them. And so that was just all there was to it. So consequently, I didn't have the problem of worrying about where to sleep and where they were going to sleep and what they were going to do while I was at work and so on and so forth. And plus the fact that my kids came to me all at teenagers. So they were, well, one was 11 when it came to live with me, but basically 11 and up. And so they were pretty much, you know, amazingly, I find that 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, they're a lot more capable of taking care of themselves than some people like to believe. And so we never had any problem.
Yes. And there's a story I was going to mention as soon as the pop-ups stop hitting me. The people that, I don't know, Cliff and I have both programmed, made websites before.